This episode of What the Tech is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience at a fraction of what you're paying, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code WHATTHETECH when you check out. And by Casper, an online retailer of premium mattresses for a fraction of the price, because everyone deserves a great night's sleep. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting casper.com/Andrew and enter promo code Andrew at checkout. Terms and conditions apply. What the tech? What the tech? Hey, everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarin. Of course, I'm joined by Mr. Paul Theroux. How you doing, Paul?
Pretty good.
You got a haircut? Is that a haircut, I said?
No.
I don't notice these things anymore.
That's because my hair was flopping around when I was diving under my desk looking for my headphones, which have disappeared somehow.
We did not. Did we do a show after Thanksgiving? If not, let me just wish you a happy Thanksgiving.
Wow.
I'm not too sure if we did one. I know we did First Ring Daily on Friday. I co-hosted with you, and it was a lot of fun. And you know, we do this. We've been doing this for years, and everything has like its own flow and stuff. But that's like a different show, and it was interesting to try something different with you. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun. For people who don't know, First Ring Daily, it's on Therot.com. It's a Therot exclusive. I'm sure everybody watching this right now has seen the show. Well, on Friday, I was on the show, so definitely go check it out. Check it out every day. Every Friday is a free show. And Monday through Thursday, you and Brad do a premium show where you do daily tech updates. And every day has a different theme.
You're right.
Awesome stuff. Therot.com. And there is a promotion right now, right? Correct? It's therot.com/holiday.
Yes. Yep.
/FRD. Did I get that right?
Yes.
There's a promotion for listeners of the show and, of course, for Therot.com members, readers. Are they readers, right? Therot.com readers. So definitely go check it out. Paul, we have a lot to talk about. Obviously, I want to reflect at the end of the show on 2016. And
yes, let's reflect.
We should, because it was a very interesting year and a lot of changes. You know what? If I told you that Microsoft was going to put out this giant screen and have it be like $8,000, would you have agreed with me?
No. Well, I mean, the device wouldn't have surprised me. The price would have.
The price would have surprised you, yeah. But there is, I mean, there's a lot to reflect on and the changes. The next 2 weeks are going to be the best of 2016, which I do see a lot of Microsoft products being on there because they really have put out a decent line of hardware. I mean, 2016 was a really great year for them as far as, you know, really high quality products, Windows 10 anniversary. I don't know if that's the best stuff or worst stuff.
A
little bit of both. And, you know, a lot of Samsung probably gets it the worst. So we're definitely going to talk about that on the worst stuff. But before we get into what we're going to talk about today, I want to thank our sponsor, and that's Harry's. Guys, I've been talking about Harry's razors for a long time. And they have a great deal for our audience. It's a great shave for a fraction of the price. Here is the Harry's shave set right here. This is the holiday set, Paul.
Ooh,
they have a holiday set.
Red and stuff?
Right now they have a great deal. Get $5 off the limited edition holiday set when you use the offer code WHATTHETECH when you go to harrys.com. You know, this is great because I'm gonna do something bad right now. I'm gonna tell people what I'm buying my family for Christmas, and that is gonna be Harry's razors. I have a couple of these laying around. You know, they send it to show every holiday and every promotion that they do. I have like three of them just sitting here. Because how many handles do I need? You know, I've been giving people Harry's razors, and I've been ordering razors too from Harry's every Christmas. I give somebody a Harry's razor, and every time I give them this gift, they think it's the best thing ever. I'll show you. It's midnight blue, Paul. Look at this thing. It's not green. It's midnight blue, so it's not... You could use it year-round. Obviously, this is how the set comes. It's a beautiful packaging and a beautiful box. And you know what? The guy in your life, whether it's your brother...
Who is the guy in my life?
You are the guy in my life, Paul. But you already have a Harry's Razor and you shave with one, so you don't need one. The guy in your life, give him something that it's going to be useful. You don't want to give your dad, your brother, your uncle a gift that they're never going to use. This is a practical gift, and it's inexpensive. It's not going to hit you over the head when you go to check out. Get $5 off the limited edition holiday set when you use the code WhatTheTech when you go to harrys.com. These guys are great. They've been supporting the show. I've told you this 1,000 times. I'm telling you right now, this is a gift to give. Harrys.com. Use WhatTheTech. Get $5 off the limited edition holiday set. Paul, let's talk about DirecTV Now. And we spoke about this a little bit on First Ring Daily on Friday. And did you get the service yet?
We did not. Signed up. I haven't picked a plan or anything.
Okay.
But
you definitely should pick the plan because I don't know how long they're going to run that promotion on the 30-something dollars.
Yeah. I'm eager to throw money at something I'm not going to use. But I probably should get it. Yeah.
You got to lock your rate in right now. So I've been using this. When did we talk about this? We spoke about this on Friday.
Friday.
Came out last Wednesday or Tuesday, something like that. So I got it the day of, and I didn't even use it. And then the next day, I started playing around with it.
Oh.
And when we spoke about it, I was, I think, one day into having the service. By the way, I could pull it up here so you could just see right now, $35 right now for 100 channels, which is not bad. And I've been comparing all the different live streaming services over the last year or so that they've existed, Sling TV, PlayStation View, and now DirecTV Now. I'm really critical about the clarity and the quality of these services. But somebody that is even more critical of these things is Suncast in our chat room. And, he does a tech show with me, and I gave him my username and password to play around with. He's mooching, Paul. He's part of that.
Yeah.
We got to go back to First Ring Daily. I gave him my username and password. I said, John, check it out. Let me know what you think, because he will find something wrong with it. He sent me a message this morning. He goes, I have to tell you, this is really good, and it looks unbelievable in iOS. It runs the best in iOS out of all the different things that he's tried, but out of all the services that exist, this is definitely the best one when it comes to overall quality, presentation, the guide, getting it to work, how quick it changes channels, which is something that you really wouldn't think about, but they seem to be onto something. You know, they had a couple issues early on, the first day or two with the signups, but
This is
a brand new product. This is a first gen release. And I have to tell you, I'm very impressed. Very, very impressed by the service.
Okay.
Now looking into 2017, I mean, maybe this is it. Maybe it's going to be DirecTV that kind of figures this out.
If I had said to you, DirecTV is going to be the company that nails it.
Isn't that interesting?
Right?
But, well,
no one would have guessed that.
Sling is owned by Dish, right?
Yeah.
So now you
DirecTV is owned by, aren't they owned by AT&T?
It is AT&T now, yeah.
I
think they were Liberty and Liberty got bought by them. So I guess it's AT&T that figured it out. But this is all going to tie in,
a company owned by AT&T figured it out.
Well, what was the thing AT&T has now in their ads where they're saying that you could watch TV on your AT&T plan, then it's not going to count towards your plan, right?
Yeah, a lot of carriers are doing that kind of thing. Yeah, right.
Isn't this the whole anti-net neutrality thing, Remember that, the argument two years ago?
Yes, but as a consumer, don't you kind of want that? I mean, there are two ways you can do this. If we're not going to have unlimited data, then the ability to stream, content or do whatever on that network cannot be charged against your data. It's kind of a nice advantage.
It is a nice advantage. I don't know if this works with that. I don't know if this plan specifically is bundled into that where it doesn't use it, but I'm very impressed by the service. This is kind of the future of this. The only thing you're missing is DVR. It has no DVR. I know Sony has a DVR feature, the Sony View. That's fine. I don't necessarily DVR that much, so it's not a make or break for me. For me, I want to put on the channel and I want to get the best possible quality without having cable if we're doing a comparison here. And it's never going to be cable quality, at least now, until they go over to, a new codec, until they do H.265 and they could limit the bandwidth but higher the quality. But this is a really nice step into the right direction. I think this is more of a leap into the right direction right now.
Yeah, that's what it's saying. I haven't tried it. So obviously, I did talk to my wife about this, by the way, and I think the trick to this is going to be, and you really have to be careful about it, kind of go back and look at what did you watch this year? You know, really, like, what did you really watch? Yeah, on TV. And on TV means everything from literally on TV, like stuff you got off of cable, to Netflix and Hulu and whatever. Mm-hmm. And I do sort of think that we could do pretty well. I'm nervous about that conversation with the cable company, in this case, Fios, because you know how they work. And I, you know, we'll see. I'm a little nervous about it.
So why? Okay, here's a question I'm going to ask you.
That was a good sound, by the way.
Yeah. Here's a question for you.
Yeah.
Yep. Why DirecTV? Why were they the ones that were able to assemble this type of plan? And, you know, Verizon hasn't done it. Time Warner's done a crappy job. Comcast has done a crappy job. None of them have really leaped into this where they're saying, listen, 100-plus channels for $35, pretty good quality.
Andrew, that's actually really easy to answer. The reason is they weren't winning anything. These guys were the also-rans. The innovations, whether it's literally the features or just the pricing, always comes from the guys who are not winning. You know, when you're comfortable and you're doing well, you don't do something like this. There's no reason to mix things up.
Yeah.
DirecTV is an also-ran in this business, TV, you know, television content delivery, whatever you want to call it. And so, I would never have guessed. I would never have said DirecTV. But in retrospect, yeah, I mean, that's the company that's going to come from, right?
But isn't it? But satellite has always been the aggressive one in this. You know, I mean, go back to the digital days. You're right. Go back to the digital days. They were the ones that were offering you 5,000 channels from like Uzbekistan you could get on your satellite, you know?
Yeah, because there was always these dark sides with satellite. You'd be like, satellite's really great for whatever. And like, my dad had satellite 15 years ago, and the picture would go out when it got cloudy.
Yeah.
You know? You had issues with bandwidth through, you'd have to have a partnership with a cable company because your download speeds would be fine, whatever they were at the time, but your upload speeds were like dial-up modem. Yeah. I think literally in some cases were a dial-up modem. And so they've always had that kind of, stigma, and they've always kind of been also-rans, and whether it was deserved or not, and I think actually it was, but that's always been the case. And so here we are, and suddenly they're, you know, the world has gone electronic, right? And now they can be their aggressive selves and do something good.
I love the fact that there are options now. You know, this is the part. This is the cool thing. And I think 2017 is really going to open this up where if you want to have 100 channels, you don't have to have cable. You know, $35, that's not a lot of money compared to what you would normally be paying with cable. And, they tell you it's $48. You know, it's like, $40 a month, you get this many channels, but it's only for 2 years. And then it goes up to $70. And then you got all the federal charge, you know, the taxes and then the this fee and the that fee. And by the end, you're at $100. And you're barely watching TV. I could justify spending $35 for the five channels that I watch over spending it, you know, spending $100, obviously. I don't know if this is going to be the future for everybody. I don't know if it's going to be a mixed environment where you kind of have cable, but you don't have it on in other rooms and other devices. But this is a nice little leap into what we're looking for, what we're going to see in 2017.
Yeah, I actually think the advantage of this being a digital service is that you can get it anywhere. And that's the thing you miss with cable. I mean, it wasn't always this case, but one of the nice things about Netflix, you travel even internationally and that content is always there. And when you have children or whatever, like I do, and you're on the road and they're bored and everything like that kind of thing, you know, it helps. And I think it's impossible not to, you know, Apple said something stupid like, you know, the future of TV is apps, you know. I mean, the present of TV is apps. I mean, it's not really a huge innovation. I mean, the ability to actually get TV and TV, whatever you think that means, right? Whether you're binge watching something on Netflix or it's literally a live sporting event or anything in between, it all needs to be that portable. And I don't care who does it.
Yeah, I don't either.
And I think competition's great, and I will move back and forth. I think the hardest part is that thing we talked about Friday. It's the conversation with the cable company. And whether it's real or just imagined, because I think we freak out about this kind of stuff. Everyone does. Like, no one wants to, you know, you ever call a cable company? Jeez, is there a worse thing to have to do in life.
Go to the DMV.
Yeah.
But I think that's even painless now. I think that's even gotten better than calling the cable company.
Right, because you can do it digitally. Yeah. And so I think once you do it, once you get over that hump, the rest of your life for this kind of thing becomes a lot easier. Because if you decide that, you know, these three or four services are going to meet all of my, you know, again, TV needs, whatever TV means, you can shift one of those two out or in as you go forward, and who cares? Now it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, and now we also have this notion of, like, one of the things that changed with carriers, it's going to change with TV, is the ability to just go in and out of this thing as you want to. You know, I don't do this, and I should, because I really don't use the phone too much when I'm home. But, you know, with Google Fi, for example, I could just pause the account. I don't have to pay because I'm not really using it.
You can pause it when you don't need it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the ability to do that with these services, you can't call Fios and be like, hey, I don't think I'm going to watch a lot of TV this month. Do you think I could pay less? You know, yeah. That's not it.
Well, you can suspend your service, but I mean, it's still not an easy process to go through, and they don't want to make it easy.
Yeah, no, of course. And that's what I'm saying. I think the move to these digital services, and it's not apps, you know, like Apple said, it's digital services. Yes, there will be apps on mobile devices, but it could be a website. It could be whatever. I mean, it doesn't have to be your iPhone. I mean, It could be any device.
A lot of people are asking right now.
I think puts us over the top.
A lot of people are asking what channels are listed. I don't know if someone in the chat room could find it and post it for people asking. Just the link of the channels. It's all of them. I saw the link. I just closed it out.
We had it up on the show last Friday. It was three columns because they have different versions of it and all the stuff they offer. It's basically everything you could imagine except for CBS.
Yeah, which CBS today actually said they will be coming to DirecTV Now as soon as a deal could be reached.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so I think they realize that there's something a little bigger with this DirecTV Now thing. It's a little bigger than they thought, so now they're going on board. You know, these holdouts are a thing of the past, if you ask me. You're going to see less and less of that. I forgot what carrier, what cable company it is. Somebody was telling me that they have no Viacom stations. How do you go into a market? I mean, how does that's a lot of channels not to have.
Isn't that, it's like all the channels.
It's like all the channels. Yeah, I mean, really.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's interesting. But I am curious to see how this changes. You know, this has been the dream you and I have had for the Apple TV, where Apple enters into this mix. Obviously, I think it'll be a little bit more expensive because they're Apple. So let's say $45, right? 100 and something channels. You get it through Apple. You have just one box now. And you're done. That's it. You're finished. You don't have to ever have a cable company. You just have your internet and you're finished. The cable industry really has to start thinking twice about these moves that they're doing. I don't understand why Verizon doesn't have an internet-only plan. You have IPTV. Right. You get the plan that you want, you know, the 100 by 100, 75 by 75, whatever the plan that they're offering, and then you just sign up for their internet plan instead of their actual, you know, hard line plan.
Fios, I mean, I love Fios, but they're probably unique among cable providers. I realize it's not technically cable, but cable providers, where you have to use their router, you know, for example, just because of the way they do things. I mean, you can add a router to it. You can do kind of hokey stuff like that, but I think they just make it really hard to get out of their little system, and I think the process is so daunting for most that we just never even bother. And even the thing we're describing, the thing I just said, you know, sit down and figure out, like, how did we actually watch TV? You know, my wife and I, in this case, like, what did that look like this year? And like, what service or services most likely would satisfy those needs? And would it cost less? And would it cost less if we stuck with Fios but moved so that we were only using their internet? The whole thing, like, you just start thinking about it and you're like, oh, like, it's just. And I think that's the lock-in strategy that these guys have. Just make it so miserable that nobody bothers.
I don't know. I'm hoping that a lot of this changes. You know, we've seen the change with the cell phone companies getting a little bit more, the wireless companies getting a little bit more flexible with their plans and their devices. I mean, Paul, you remember when everything was exclusive to a brand? You know,
right.
You could only buy the black. I mean, it's still to some extent like that, but it's not on the main scale. Not on, you know, you It's not like the S7, Samsung S7 is only available on Verizon and not on AT&T.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was like that for the longest time, but now they've realized that that's crazy. Did we ever get numbers from Verizon or AT&T on how it affected the swing of things when the iPhone came over to all the different carriers? Did that data ever get released? Because
it did. But I don't remember. I mean,
was it like a major swing back to Verizon or Sprint?
I think each of them experienced a bump when that happened.
Yeah, interesting. That's interesting. Yeah. So, DirecTV Now seems pretty good. You know, I'm obviously going to use it for a long-term usage case. I want to know. Maybe I'll hate it in months, but I don't know. For now, I'm pretty happy with it.
I just had this conversation with my wife, right? And about the little, it's like death by a thousand cuts. It's the little things, or sometimes big things, that we pay for every month that, add up, right? So we've got a kid in college. We're not made of money. How do we make this thing work, right? And so I'll just give you one example because I know this is a boring conversation. I subscribe to a lot of magazines through Kindle, right? And I read them on an iPad. Some of them I don't actually read every month. And so you think, well, okay, that's easy. Just get rid of those magazines. But here's the thing. You go and you look them up. If you pay by the year, you're going to get it for the year. If I cancel now, I still paid for it. I'm not going to save any money for, in some cases, several months. Okay. But the cost sometimes is like nothing. Some of these things cost as little as $5 a year.
Yeah.
Some of them are $10 a year. Some of them are 20. Some of them, are 30, like you would expect. I mean, so they go up, right? And so I think if you added them all up, I bet I'm spending about $200 a year on magazine content. And I probably do read 50% of it all, straight through. And then the other 50% I kind of read from time to time. Maybe I'm stuck on a plane. I'm looking around and I've got six, issues of the BBC History magazine I never read. Okay. And I can learn something about some obscure World War One battle or something. I don't know. So is that a good way to save money? I mean, I don't even know, you know, and then this thing you're describing, like I could throw in, I could sign up. I probably will, by the way, but I could sign up for this thing. It's $35 a month, but for this thing to work out for me, I need to do all that stuff I just said. And is it worth the effort? Is it worth the effort?
Yeah.
But
we've become a society where we are constantly tied to subscriptions now with everything. $5. I pay X amount a month for my Google storage, right? And then I'm paying for iCloud. I'm paying for Office 365. I'm paying for Photoshop. Adobe's Photoshop suite. That's another couple to $50-$60 a month. Plus this, plus that. At the end of the year, you may not look at it and you say to yourself, like you said, it's only $200 for the year. But across how many different services? I'm willing to bet. I mean, I'm a little different because I have to kind of be in all these different environments. If I didn't do a podcast, I probably had to have no need for the Adobe suite. I would probably have no need to be in 10 different ecosystems. So obviously, it's part of the expense of, having a business. But it's still ridiculous. And at one point, you have to look back. I'm a big fan of doing this audit every year. Once a year.
That's sort of what I'm talking about. Yep.
And I'm telling you, we have to get away, and this is how I justify it with myself. I say to myself, well, if I did cut this and this and this, I'm only saving like $300 for the year, right? Like you think about it that way, you can kind of justify it, but $300 is $300. And $300 across, a couple years, that's a couple $1,000.
Yeah, no, right. So at some point, I think the genius of these schemes is that they are individually not expensive, but you kind of add them up, I pay for one of the more expensive tiers of Netflix. It might be the most expensive tier, and I do that because you can have more users using the service at the same time, and because you can have 4K content. We have 4K TVs now, and to me, it's worth it. My kids both use Netflix every day, and my wife and I watch Netflix regularly as well. So whatever the cost of that thing is in a year, it's got to be. I'm sure we're paying something like $15 a month or whatever that is.
Yeah.
So 150 plus 30 is $180 a year. it's a lot more expensive than a $5, $10, $15, $20 magazine subscription, yeah. but we use it so much more. It's also a lot less than whatever our cable bill is, although we use cable as well.
Guys, you know?
It's hard to figure it out.
It is really hard to figure out at the end of the year. I say this to everybody, and this is something I was very conscious of this year. I pulled back on these constant upgrades and upgrading my phone every year and upgrading my devices. And I really pulled back the last year, and I feel like I'm freed from this need to upgrade and have the latest and the greatest and the newest. And people tell me all the time, they go, well, you cover technology. How have you never used it? And I go, because I don't want to go and buy it. I'm still on an iPad Air. I rarely use an iPad, so why would I constantly buy an iPad every year? Just so I could talk about it for 45 minutes? You know, it's stupid.
By the way, a lot of people do that.
I know, and sometimes you have to. Sometimes you have to, but for me, I couldn't. I've decided that I'm cutting that. I'm not going to do it. I'm trying to be a little smarter this year with these.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I got a kid now. I got another kid on the way. So you got to kind of put things into perspective. This is an interesting discussion, and I want to, you know, we'll constantly go back to this. But since we're talking about buying stuff, I do want to talk about Amazon Go and how much of a reality this is going to be. And, you know, this kind of goes back on the impulse buy again. You know, everything is a little easier when you don't have to go through so many steps. I want to talk about that. But before we do, let's talk about Casper, another great sponsor to the show. If I could find it right here. Here we go. Where do we go? There we go. It's Casper. I've had a Casper mattress. Oh, God, for 2 years now, Paul has had a Casper mattress, and it is the best night's sleep that I've ever had. I tell the story all the time. I had a very expensive mattress I got when I blew out my back. I have 4 herniated discs in my back, and I said, maybe I could feel better if I get a new mattress. I walked into a store about 7 years ago, and I got bamboozled into buying this $2,000-something mattress that I hated every single day. When Casper said they were going to sponsor the show, I said, you know what? Let me give it a shot. This thing comes in a box. I was shocked. You take it out. It opens up. It's latex and memory foam. It uses 2 technologies. I set it up, and that night, I slept like a baby. And they have a great offer for you guys. Get $50 off any mattress purchase by visiting Casper.com/Andrew, and you enter in the promo code Andrew at checkout. That's Casper.com/Andrew. Terms and conditions do apply. These guys are great. I absolutely love it. And this is the best part. 100 nights they give you. Painless returns. They offer you free delivery. And if you hate it after 100 nights, guess what? You can send it right back. And it's made in the USA. Casper.com/Andrew. Paul.
Yes.
Let's talk about Amazon Go. What do you think of this?
I don't know. You know, my wife experimented with... not Amazon Go, but what's their delivery service for food? They have a delivery service for food.
Anyway, yeah.
She experimented with that. It's kind of goofy to get food this way. It was of high quality. It was fairly expensive. I think you pay, I don't know if it's $30 a delivery or $15 a delivery, but there's some price, right? And she thought the food was actually very high quality, vegetables, meat, whatever. Amazon Go, though, it's a little, I don't know. It's kind of... I find it odd when virtual companies kind of move in the opposite direction, right? It's like the part of a trend I'm starting to see in a lot of things. It's like when people who are young start listening to albums, right? Like you grow up in this digital world and suddenly analog things are really interesting to you because it's not the norm. And I don't think this is ever going to be a major... you know, business for them per se, but I think this helps them cross that final barrier, you know, and I guess the big, what am I trying to equate this to? It is Amazon. I think their inherent advantage is their ability to have physical and virtual offerings that can be commingled in ways where it makes sense to have one because you have the other. You know, they do that with Prime, and some of the advantages of Prime are related to physical goods, but some of them are related to virtual services.
Yeah.
And I think it gives them kind of a unique advantage. And I think this is just another step in that direction. But
I mean, this is them going after like the POS machines, you know, the point of sale guys, not the other POS.
No,
point of sale machines. This is them
this
going
is
after
like
that.
The it's the supermarket from Westworld.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
It's really strange.
You get what you you know. There's a couple of things here. Obviously, when you incorporate technology and things like this, there's more chances of mistakes happening. And what does this do to jobs? What does this do to changes? You know, and what are what kind of reality do you know? Somebody was telling me this, and I was talking to him about this yesterday at a bar, and he goes, dude, you know how many of these grocery stores are union-controlled? They're union-run? You think they're right. going to allow something like this from coming in? You think this is going to be a thing that they're going to push it? I'm like, listen, I don't know. I don't know how much of reality this is. I don't know if this is a far-fetched idea like the Amazon drone delivery service. I know Amazon wants to get... You know, Amazon wants to possibly compete with UPS and start delivering their own packages. There's a lot
that
Amazon...
They're not going to be happy until they've eliminated everybody.
Everybody.
Right? Isn't that their business model?
Yeah.
Just replicate everything.
Replicate everything. You know, sell it.
We're going to do everything.
Sell it for virtually nothing. Make no earnings on it and claim a loss every year. You know?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Don't make it, brilliant. I do think it's a very interesting thing that they're going after. And that is now the brick and mortars. They want to enter into this, and
I don't know why. Frankly,
I can't imagine Walmart welcoming an idea like this.
I don't understand it at all.
This is just one more step towards annihilation. If you're a brick and mortar, they killed the bookstore.
Well, yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, Barnes & Noble was a great example of what Amazon was able to do. Walmart is fighting and clawing to kind of survive in this Amazon world. And I have to tell you, we're all responsible for this. I buy everything on Amazon. I buy everything on Amazon.
I think everybody does. I mean, yeah, you know?
Everybody does. I mean, this is how it's changed. And it's amazing to think about I remember the first thing I ever bought on Amazon was Along Came a Spider by James Patterson.
That's amazing.
That was the first thing that I bought.
Right.
And it was 1998. I had a book report. I had to pick a... There was some sort of theme, and I got it, and I thought to myself, oh my God, this is awesome. And then I started buying CDs on Amazon. I still have my original my original account from Amazon. It's crazy to think about it, but look how far they've come in the last 15 years.
Right.
And now they're entering into brick and mortar. I don't know how much of reality it is. I think it's pretty cool. Obviously, you'll have a couple stores in San Francisco doing this. But I don't know if it's a reality as far as, you know, a major market. Paul, can you see your local stores doing this? Your grocery store doing this?
No. No, you don't partner with the devil. You know, you don't partner with the company that's going to put you out of business. It would almost be like Amazon extending a fig leaf to Barnes & Noble and saying, hey, how about a little, Barnes & Noble is... They're gone, right?
Yeah.
Is Barnes & Noble gone? No.
Almost. No, Barnes & Noble's done.
They're still around. Yeah. But, you know, God, can you imagine how awful that is?
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
I mean, Radio Shack, another great example. Radio Shack, Barnes & Noble. These were all, brick and mortars that were institutions for the last 20, 25 years. And now they're slowly one by one leaving. I mean, you're going to be left with Amazon and Walmart at the end of the day.
Great.
And we're gonna
right. Dumb and dumber.
Yeah. Yeah. Home Depot. Yeah. Home Depot. Lowe's. Barnes and Noble. Barnes and Noble's gone. Yeah. We're gonna be left with like five stores, and we're all gonna go and talk to robots.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's the future we're living in, Paul.
Yep.
The future's now.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Guys, we just ran a contest on our Twitter. We gave away on our Twitter. We have a Twitter.
Is that what we call it? Our Twitter?
Yeah. What would you call it?
I don't know. I guess on Twitter.
On Twitter? Yeah. Yeah, on Twitter.
On the Twitter?
On the Twitter at What the Tech GFQ.
You shared it on
and
the Twitter.
I am shocked. The contest is over. Somebody won. It lasted 30 minutes.
Okay. And how did you – I don't understand
how
you
did this.
It was
an Amazon giveaway.
Yeah.
You
can automate it through Amazon.
Yeah. Talking about the devil, right? We did it on Amazon. They even make that simple for you. We ran the contest through there. We just gave away a Roku Express. And I was hoping that I would announce it on the show, and it would take a couple weeks or a couple days till somebody won. Well, you know, maybe I limited down to 2,000, 1 in 2,000 chance. I think I should have done a little bit more. But somebody won already after posting in 20 minutes. We're giving away. And next week we'll do another giveaway. I will give another item away next week, and I'll open it up and I'll make it a little longer so other people could, you know, more people could sign up. But I think the next 2 weeks I'm going to be doing a giveaway for the holidays. Even if you don't need it, guess what? You could give it to somebody. So we're going to be running that. But these contests are possible because of your support. If you go to patreon.com/whatthetech, you can fund us there. You can fund us whatever you want. You get access to bonus materials, extra shows that we do after the show. And we are able to do contests like this. You guys are funding it. It's awesome. Go there right now, patreon.com/whatthetech. You can fund us, and we it allows us to do more and more things like this. Paul, let's reflect a little. What do you think?
Okay.
Let's talk about this year. Let's talk about 2016. We're in 2016, right? Yeah. 2016. It was an interesting year for technology. We saw a major... I mean, I've never seen a company have a mishap like Samsung did with a product, with a consumer product on such a wide scale.
To be fair, it's possible that Microsoft's Xbox 360 problems were as big. Mm-hmm. The difference is that this is something that you put on your face or carry it in your pocket and it could explode, right?
Yeah.
So I don't know if it was the biggest one or whatever, but it was certainly the most humiliating and damaging, right?
Yeah. Well, terrible. I think it was humiliating because it was actually a great product and all the praise that people got, you know, that they gave to this product. I mean, a ton of people, almost every review was, this is a great phone. And then this happened a week later. And it was the fact that they couldn't figure out what the problem was initially. You know, right. Microsoft knew that there was an issue.
What?
Microsoft knew, like, once the problem started happening, they knew what the problem was.
With the Xbox.
With the Xbox, yeah. And it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't exploding. Just stopped working.
No, it wasn't exploding. It just stopped working.
Yeah.
But yeah, so in Samsung's case, I don't know if you saw the latest news on this, but it's interesting. I never really knew this about batteries, but I guess batteries, as they heat up, expand. And so Samsung, it's funny, this is the type of thing you'd almost picture happening to Apple because of they're so aggressive on thin devices.
Thinner, faster.
But they literally, I guess they shaved off some of the protection that sits in the battery between the positive and negative sides. And they shaved off the space that would normally be around the battery to allow it to expand. And they basically just left no room.
By the way, let me just say this. I meant Note 7, not S7. Note 7. I don't know why I keep saying I have an S7. I'm looking at it right now. That's why. The Note 7. Before I get called an idiot on YouTube. The Note 7.
Yeah, because those things are... Yeah, you couldn't imagine someone misspeaking on those two names. I knew what you meant, and I didn't hear it.
Thank you.
Okay. But whatever. It's funny... It's very clear, well, assuming this is true, and it's one of those things that seems true, that Samsung created, you know, it's like they pushed the envelope too far, you know? They just were trying to make the best possible high-end phablet they could, and they overdid it on the battery.
Yeah. It's amazing that, you know, it took them this long to figure it out because initially they couldn't replicate the problem.
Yeah.
So... Yeah. What I'm curious about is, and I'm trying to understand. Like, this would have been an issue way more widespread if they hadn't done this recall,
right?
Because it's an actual the form factor of the phone is the problem. It's not that some batteries are bad and some are better. They were all designed this way, so this could have happened on a way bigger scale, and it could have been far more dangerous than people initially thought it was. But how does Samsung now recover from this? You know, Microsoft was still selling the Xbox 360. Samsung, there is no Note 7. It's gone.
Yeah, exactly. And if you go to their site and look at the, whatever they call that section, you know, phablets or notes or whatever, it's like old stuff. it's very strange.
Yeah, so I guess the Note 8 will be the next one. The one that doesn't explode.
Yeah.
But this year was a very interesting time for technology and how we've, you know, and you wrote something, you put some notes in here, and obviously we're going to talk about it, but you wrote something, you go, smartphones got boring.
Yeah. Well, aside from the exploding. Aside from that, if you look at something like the Galaxy S7 or the iPhone 7 and 7 Plus and the Google Pixel and the Pixel XL, what you see universally is excellent phones. There's no doubt about it. They're the best phones that those companies have ever made, clearly. But they're also not major upgrades to the previous products, right? And not that anyone should be going from one smartphone in 1 year to a new smartphone the next year if they're paying for them outright. And most people don't do that. But, you know, as reviewers, we kind of have access to these devices and we see the new ones and you make that comparison. And it's very interesting to me that, you know, these things are all kind of middling upgrades from the previous product. In the case of the iPhone, there's no doubt overall that this is the best iPhone ever made, you know, blah, blah, blah. But that said, I actually don't think the camera is as good. And the camera was one of the big upgrades in this version of the device.
Well, I think, you know, they really banked on the software technology behind it. Right. With the
portrait mode stuff. That is the weakest aspect of this phone. I think of this phone's camera. The ability to do 2x optical zoom will be looked back with much laughter because 2x, I mean, spare me. But having optical zoom in one of the, you know, probably the best selling smartphone model made today is important. Like, I think it's a nice step. I mean, there'll be 4x and whatever down the road, but that's neat. But it's interesting that overall the camera quality to me just isn't there. It's interesting to me that the Pixel and the Pixel XL have great cameras, but in my opinion, they're not as good as the camera that was in the Nexus 6P, which preceded it. The Samsungs, I don't have as much of a handle on. I know you have a 7.
I do, and I feel with the Samsungs, a lot of it is software driven, right? The quality of it. And I've seen, and I have taken, and I have seen from other people some spectacular photos with this camera, which you have seen. I mean, we've hung out and I've taken a photo and you were actually stunned. You said, oh my God, this is one of the best photos I've seen taken with a camera. There are other moments. Like, I'll give an example. I had my wife's best friend came over with her kids and we had our Christmas tree set up. So she wanted to do her pregnancy announcement with the kids in front of the tree because she was announcing on Facebook that she's pregnant. I could not, for the life of me, with my phone, get the shot to look good. Could not do it. Everything was yellow. It wasn't focused right. I had nothing but problems. My wife took out her iPhone, click, and it looked fine. Looked perfectly fine.
Yeah. So the big advantage of the iPhone for the past few versions, at least, has been the performance, right? The speed at which you take a picture. And then the quality of the picture is generally good, you know? The Nexus 6P, in my experience, has been slower, but the pictures come out better, assuming you're not taking a picture of something that's moving really quickly, you know, or whatever. In fact, that was a running gag when we were away this past trip. These boats are moving slowly down the canals, and literally I can't get a picture of it before it leaves the frame.
Which camera is this with?
The 6P, the Nexus. Even though, you know, the thing's moving is slower than you could possibly imagine. And it was like, someone was like, hey, Paul, that boat's tied to a dock. Do you think you could get a picture of that one? You know, and it's like, okay. You know, that's what it's like. I mean, it's
I tell you, I mean, that we're still in this weird thing. But I agree with you. We did not really get the cell phone. You know what was a great phone? The Samsung S6. Great phone.
Yep.
I got the S7 Edge. I have to tell you, didn't really care for the phone. I would have been perfectly fine if I had the S6 still. There wasn't any major improvements. Camera wasn't that much better. The software wasn't that much better. It wasn't that much faster. And the same goes for the iPhone. Now, 2017 may be a very different year. From the rumors that we have seen, Apple's going with a, you know, glass edge style, mm-hmm. when the whole thing is this beautiful glass phone and the screen is bigger, but the phone isn't. You know, maybe that's going to be the phone. Maybe that's going to be the one that everybody wants, and it's going to have 18x optical zoom, and it transforms into a robot.
Sure.
You know? I'll never forget that. That was the best one when I, well, which iPhone? I think, was it the iPhone 5 when my local news, Fox 5, yeah, local New York, or was it NBC? I can't remember. But they put out this video saying, like, and the phone is going to have a laser keyboard, and it's going to have a projector. You could project your TV on the wall. It was this, it was like a fan video.
Someone had come up with like a concept of, it was going to have a virtual keyboard that projected onto the surface of the table.
Scud missiles.
It's too bad.
Maybe we'll get that one day. What else happened this year, Paul? What was it the year of? If you were to think it was the year of, I would say you have it right here, 4K.
Yeah, we're on the cusp. I mean, a lot of people are going to hear that and say, what are you talking about? I'm still using a 1080p set and will be for a long time to come. I mean, I think this was the year that 4K, UHD, and I think HDR is as important to the story as 4K is.
Absolutely.
In fact, if you had to make a choice, I would choose HDR over 4K. But,
well, what did we watch at your house? We watched, it was HDR, 4K.
Oh, I'm sure I showed you that Mad Max movie.
Yes. Oh my! It looked too good. It looked too real because it was almost like I was.
You
watching
actually complained.
A play.
In fact, as I'm thinking about it, you complained that it was too good.
It was too. It felt too.
It reminded
real.
Me of that scene in Major League where the guy hit the home run and it went out of the park, and the guys in the stadium were like, "It's too high." And the other guy said, "What does that mean, too high?" You know. It's like it's too high.
Yeah,
it's too well hit.
It looked like I was watching like a performance art piece in the living room. It looks like it's right there.
Looks great, you know, in many ways, right? I mean, you know, it looked great in the theater. It looks great on normal Blu-ray, 1080p, whatever. But yeah, there's something about it. It's just one of those digitally transformed movies that they've color corrected it to a huge degree, and it's. It's crazy what it looks like. But that was one of them. And I think, I don't know if I put up Gears of War 4, but if you play, Gears of War 4 is not in 4K, but it's in HDR and on the Xbox One S. I mean, it's incredible looking, and it's interesting how much better that game looks, you know, with HDR. And I think HDR has a similar kind of transformative effect, you know.
Yeah, I do think, like, you're right, what you said. People are going to say, well, I have 1080p. I still have 1080p. I don't plan on upgrading my TV this year. Maybe I'll upgrade by the end of the year next year in 2017, but I have no reason because it's a lack of content. But the content that there is, if you're watching, 4K, UHD plus HDR, there is a noticeable difference. We're not talking the 720p to 1080p. We're not talking 1080i to 1080p. This is it's a boost. It's a major increase. The problem
it's major. Yeah.
The networks, if you have cable, once again, there's nothing. You're never going to get 4K content over cable in the current delivery method. It's impossible. Yeah. They just can't do it. Verizon Fios, which had, when they first came out, they had unlimited bandwidth. They had all this available bandwidth for channels, and now they've maxed out. They can't add any more channels because they've maxed out with their current system.
By the way, 4K is going to help the cord cutting movement, right? I think the ability to get 4K content, which you can now get in Netflix, you can get it in Amazon, you get Hulu, Google Play, movies and TV just announced today, you can get it there. This is the kind of stuff that's going to drive cord cutting, because if cable can't do it, people are going to say, I just spent $1,000 or whatever on this 4K TV with UHD, HDR, whatever. I want to see content in 4K, and if TV's not going to deliver it, they're going to go elsewhere.
Yeah. And obviously, VR, virtual reality, augmented reality, compared to last year, when I crapped all over this thing, it's a major, major shift.
And it's going to be bigger again next year when the Windows holographic stuff hits. But Google this year kind of upped the ante a little bit with Daydream View, which I think is a nice improvement over the cardboard stuff because it adds interactive capabilities. PlayStation VR is out, which is going get kind of gangbusters. Oculus Rift just this week, I think, picked up those new little touch controllers with motion sensing and everything. And a lot of people are saying, like the Wall Street Journal had a nice review on this. It's kind of put that over the top And so we have this range of VR now, and AR/MR capabilities coming soon with holographic.
Yeah.
It's not fair to say like 2016 is a year of VR per se, but I think the jump has been big. And I think it's a lot like 4K, that because there are people who have never tried it, who are kind of poo-pooing it, and they don't know what they're talking about. You know, this is a bigger deal than they think.
What is MR?
Mixed reality.
Oh, mixed reality. Yeah.
Okay. It's another way of saying MR, AR. It's like, you know, VR plus, because you never, there's no such thing as augmented reality by itself. Not really, right? It's there's always a virtual reality aspect to it. So AR is what Microsoft used to just call holograms. Now they're calling it augmented reality. Actually, now what they're calling it is mixed reality. And so mixed reality is VR plus AR.
Yeah. Very, I mean, it's a major change. Obviously, there were major improvements this year, but yeah. I don't think people saw it. Like, if you looked at, you know, I knew that it was going to be a thing this year, but I didn't think it would have improved as much this year. Right. And Microsoft,
we'll be talking about it again next year.
Oh God,
I think next year is going to be an even bigger leap. But smartphones being boring, I think, is a big story. I guess 4K is probably a bigger story than maybe VR, AR, but you know, that's on the cusp.
I think a big story here is the MacBook Pro, and it's not going to be as big of a story because it came out so close to the end of the year. But
you know what?
I have to tell you, in my opinion, I think they definitely dropped the ball with this device.
I'm going to give you and everyone listening to this a little bit of homework.
Yeah,
I want you to actually do this because I did this last night and I had this little aha moment, and I wish I had written it down because I'm not going to get the quote exactly right. Somehow I was on the couch. My wife was out doing errands and I had my phone out and I have a Samsung, whatever, new 4K TV. And it does Miracast, but it also does like Chromecast, right? So from my Google phone, I can actually Chromecast right to the TV. Like I don't have to have a Chromecast device connected to it.
Yeah.
So I don't think I've ever actually used it. And so last night, for some reason, I just went to YouTube. Because of what I watch on YouTube, I have certain things that are recommended, you know, like pornography, as you would imagine.
Yeah, of course.
No, it's all like Apple stuff and device reviews. And
it's all Apple stuff. Always.
Star Wars. Yeah, there's a lot of Apple stuff. Yeah. Well, and I've watched a lot of these kind of MacBook Pro reviews. Like, and I've been kind of curious. Like, it's a machine I'm never going to buy. I'm not in the market. But I've been fascinated by the reaction to this device. It's basically what you're launching into here. But here's something this is the homework. There was a playlist where it seemed random to me, but I think it's called, I think I started out in a playlist called like every keynote Steve Jobs ever gave or something like that.
Okay.
And I watched a video of, it was like the launch of the first Power Mac. First MacBook Pro. They were switching from PowerPC to Intel. And so what it recommended as the next, I only watched a few minutes of it, and then it recommended for the next video was like the launch of the Retina. Like you want to say Power Mac, sorry.
MacBook Pro. Yeah.
I'm not like an Apple guy. I think the Retina MacBook Pro was the previous gen. I think it was
2012.
Oh, was it that long ago?
2012 was Retina, yeah.
I was going to say it was 2 years ago. So let's say 4 years ago. All right, assuming that's the video, Phil Schiller does the introduction. And what I want you to listen to is the way he describes Apple's goals with any new MacBook Pro. He describes exactly what they did this year. I mean, exactly. And I don't mean like he didn't say anything about USB-C ports. They didn't exist back then. But what he said was, our goal is always to push the envelope. I'm paraphrasing. I'm not remembering this exactly right. Mm-hmm. But he said specifically with regards to the ports that we put on the device, the thinness of the device, the battery life of the device, the quality of the screen. And the fascinating thing is the only thing that changed between then and now, I'm sorry, the only thing that didn't change was the screen, right? I don't think they actually bumped the resolution on the screen. I mean, I'm sure they talked about color output and whatever, you know.
No, they didn't.
But I don't think the res went up.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
seriously, go back and watch it and think about what they just did, because they, 4 years ago, you're saying, described exactly what they just did again. When they introduced that previous generation MacBook Pro, he almost got a standing ovation. Like the place, you know, you ever watch an Apple video and all the guys are in the crowd, they all have that smug, they're all like, yeah, yeah.
We got it.
You know, they're always like, everyone in the audience loves what they're doing, right?
Yeah.
It's fascinating to me that this year they introduced that device and the whole place was like cricket chirping, like, what the hell just happened? You know, they put like a stupid strip of touch, like, which should have gone on a consumer device, not on the Pro device. But, you know, this is Apple, like, you know, what Apple would call being, you know, courageous, right? They're redefining what a Pro device is. And they finally gone too far for people. It's fascinating to me. So go back and watch just the beginning of Phil Schiller's discussion about the MacBook Pro Retina. And it is an exact description of the thing they just did.
I have my personal issues with that device. I actually, for the first time ever, I bought a MacBook Pro and I didn't feel bad when the next generation one came out. You know, I actually feel good about my purchase because I can change the hard drive if I want to on this. I can't on the new generation. The hard drive is, everything is in. Everything is locked in. You can't do anything. But there are things that Apple does, and I find it so interesting how slow they are to change with the time.
By the way, you're putting me in an awkward position.
Yes.
Of defending Apple.
Okay, go ahead. So they don't have to. Is that it?
In place of the word slow, I will use the word deliberate.
Deliberate. Okay. Here's a great example. Very good. Here's a great example, okay?
Yeah.
Perfect example. The FaceTime camera, all right? Front-facing camera. More and more people are doing... FaceTime is a huge part of what they do. Huge part of what they do. More and more people are using webcams with video services. It's still 720p.
Yeah, right.
There's no reason why it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be 1080. It's still 720p. Oh.
All right, because I just did this, I'm telling you more about my friend.
It's an Apple move.
But it's not always this way. It's not always, right? I mean, it's very easy to kind of fall into this trap. In mid-2015, Apple released the new MacBook, right? The first generation version of a Core M. It's fanless, right? If I'm not mistaken, I could be. But if I'm not mistaken, I believe that device at that time and probably even still today only comes with 8 gigabytes of RAM. Meaning by only, I mean there's no RAM option. The only way you could get it. At that time, you could buy, if you were going to shop for a similar HP, you would have been able to find a 4 gig version. That's how you would save money on that device. And I believe also that you could only get it with 256 gigs of storage. Actually, there might have been an upgrade on the storage. And I think there was an upgrade on the processor speed as well, because I'm an Apple expert. I would say in those ways, in the ways that Apple perceives to have benefit for their customers, they actually move fairly aggressively. I noted in my review of an HP laptop this past week that they got rid of the 4 gig RAM option, and now it starts with, and by the way, also the 128 gig storage option. And so the base HP Spectre X360 for 2016 comes with 8 gigs of RAM and 256 gigs of storage. Apple did that a year ago, 18 months ago.
Yeah, you're right.
You know, so I mean, HP also, to make your point though, upgraded, I think, the webcam to a 1080p front facing webcam. Right. So you're saying Apple hasn't done that.
Apple has not done that.
I don't know what to say to that. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong, and I'm absolutely not defending Apple per se, but I think I do this too. I see a lot of arrogance in Apple. And I think from Apple's perspective, they're doing what any PC maker does or whatever, which is trying to think, like, what are the things that are really important to my customers? And I think they went too far with the MacBook Pro, for whatever that's worth.
With this one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, in other words, they do things like, for example, remember the first Mac, the MacBook, still to this day only has one USB-C port. That is insanity. Just put one on the other side. God, you assholes, you know? So now they have versions with 2 and 4 ports, like the 15-inch version or any version, I think, with the touch strip gets 4 ports. Fantastic. I think that's really smart. I think that touch screen, is astonishingly stupid. And
do you think it's a stupid gimmick that people are going to look at in a year or two and say, this is the dumbest thing ever? This is a total waste.
Yes,
so they were going to look at it when there's more development and say, wow, this is genius.
It's stupid because people who are pros don't want that. They want a key. That's just dumb.
Yeah.
That's the type of thing that should have been on their consumer product line. All the little goons that like emoticons and you know, doing like iMessage on their computers or whatever would love a touch strip. You don't put that on the pro device, at least not
as a
requirement.
Is it a pro device? Is it a pro device? Because I have to tell you, almost everyone that I know has a MacBook Pro. Nobody buys a MacBook or a MacBook Air anymore. Everybody buys a MacBook Pro. I think the term is useless at this point. It's not. I understand what the point was, so, but now that's all you buy. You go into the store, you buy a MacBook Pro.
Well, no, that's not true. I mean, people going to the store, I bet they sell more MacBook Airs today, and that stupid thing
I'm curious
still
about
ships
that.
With a 1400 or whatever it is, 1440 or whatever the resolution is by 900, you know, low res SD display. Or I guess that's technically a sort of an, I guess it's like a low end HD display, whatever it is. Honestly, the biggest mistake they made on that device. Well, I think of the touch strip. I think the touch strip should have been optional.
It is
on all
it
devices.
Is. Well, it is on the Pro.
No, it isn't.
You could buy it without. No, you could buy it without the touch.
No, you can't.
No, 13 inch. They have it
on the 13 inch, but you can't on the 15.
No,
inch.
Not on the 15. Yeah.
No, but that's you're missing the point. I'm sorry. Even the version that comes with without the touch strip is not the. It's not the same as the one with it. It's not just the touch strip that's different.
Oh, okay.
If you choose the one without a touch strip, you only get two of those ports. You don't get four like
really?
You do on the touch
strip. Wait a minute. Really? Like
Yeah. Oh, what I'm saying is
that is – I had no idea.
That thing should be an add-on option, and the base version of all of those machines should not come with it because I think the pro audience doesn't want that I think by and large. I mean obviously some people do. The other thing I think they made a huge mistake on was the price, which is way too expensive even for that market. And then the third thing they did wrong was the RAM thing, right? It maxes out at 16 gigs of RAM, and they said some reason it had something to do with the battery life. Here's a newsflash, guys. You sell an iPhone that scratches the second you take it out of the box, and you just have a little disclaimer. Well, you have a little disclaimer on the 32 gig version. This is going to get worse battery life.
Yeah.
And let people make that decision for themselves. Because some people use those machines as their only computer. They're going to dock it to a big screen or whatever. It's going to be plugged in. They don't give a shit about the battery life. Could it last 3.5 hours to get across the country on a flight? That's all they need.
Yeah.
You know, that's Apple just, I don't know. I really do think they were doing it from a customer perspective. And they know how their customers work. They know, like, all these people are complaining about this doesn't meet my needs. This doesn't have an SD card. This doesn't, whatever. Apple knew all that stuff. You know, they made this decision in an educated sense.
It's interesting.
Sense.
They are kind of forcing you into this higher into the touch model, the touch bar model.
Dude, I am.
Yeah, I'm looking
freaked out right now. You have made me defend Apple, and I feel.
You feel dirty. Well, that's a good way to end the show then.
don't ever do that to me.
Guys,
no, but seriously, go and watch that video. Like I said, it's very interesting, and think about what they just announced because. It's really interesting that they haven't actually shifted from their core message.
Yeah.
And so, by the way, Chris Wolfel on Twitter posted a link to that exact video. And I think that's the exact one.
Yeah. Excellent. Guys, go to our website, gfknetwork.com. Subscribe to the podcast. We're everywhere podcasts are available. Go to therot.com. Follow Paul on Twitter at therot. You can follow me at Andrew Zarian. If you're watching this live, stay tuned. We're going to do our bonus show right now. You're not, go to patreon.com/whatthetech. You can subscribe there, fund us whatever you want, and you get access to all this bonus material. You okay?
By the way, the bonus show is just going to be us watching this video.
Okay, cool. All right, guys, that's it. We'll see you all next week. Take care.